just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic. Common sense. Compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It's Thursday, been kind of a busy week. I got to tell you, yesterday kind of sucked for me. It was one of those days where nothing really went right. You couldn't find your shoe, you lost a key, you dropped your wallet, you got lost when you're driving someplace, you can't find your car in a parking lot. All those fucking things happened to my wife and I yesterday, and it was just frustrating. We always have a great time in Savannah. But yesterday was a little hectic just by virtue of our, I don't know, remember the 70s and 80s when they said, oh, your biorhythms must be down. Don't even know what the fuck biorhythms are. But if they're a thing and when they're down, shit goes badly. Mine were down yesterday. Now, I'm not talking about anything tragic, just annoying and inconvenient, that sort of thing. But I don't get those most days. I don't really had that happen to me, so it was very foreign when it was going on yesterday. That said, we did have some fun. We went down to downtown Savannah, strolled down the Riverwalk and through downtown, the uptown area and all that. A lot of great places to see, a lot of great places to eat. Just love Savannah. But now, as I say, when you hear this, I'm either en route back to Minnesota or am already in Minnesota. We'll be back in town on, this afternoon. We'll be there, and then the show that you hear tomorrow will be back to the normal circumstances, normal studio. And I put in quote studio because it's actually my living room, but you know what I mean. It's a little more comfortable, it's a little more convenient, and things will get back on track. Now, that said, we're still in Savannah, and we've got yet another podcast we need to do. So let's get the fuck to it. I've got a lot of emails today, and I'm always excited when I see that. I love the interaction from the people, and we've got a number of emails we will get through, so let's do that. First one starts out, "Hi, Mike, I need to vent. I saw the horrific news about the shooting in Tennessee. These shootings could have been prevented. Innocent lives lost, and it sickens me. My recollection of the earliest high-profile shooting was the Columbine High School shooting in 1999. Since this shooting, I lost count of mass shootings, and no laws have changed, especially after Sandy Hook in 2012. And after 10 years, the image of 20 kids and 6 adults being killed at Sandy Hook did not persuade Congress to pass a meaningful legislation." You're absolutely right. Neither the Democrats or the Republicans were even thinking about changing the rules. And we know why. We know why, because the NRA and the gun lobby has filled the pockets of many of our members of Congress. And they're just going to do the bidding of the gun lobby and the NRA and the people that they are supposed to represent, be damned. This is why we've got to change something like this. It's bad enough the Republicans do what they do with the gun lobby and prospective gun laws. They don't want any. They want us to be able to walk around free and clear with assault weapons, semi-automatic weapons, and just do whatever we want. Doesn't matter if we're fucking nutcases or have mental disabilities. Everybody gets a gun. It's like Oprah. You get a gun. You get a gun. Everybody gets a fucking gun. But then when that happens, of course, we have shit like what happened in Nashville, Tennessee. If you listen to the Republicans, they'll tell you, well, if everybody had a gun, we'd be safe. You've got a lot of safe people, good people with guns out there. Oh, yeah, where the hell were they in Nashville when these 3 kids got shot and the 3 adults got shot? Tennessee has some of the most lax gun laws in this country. Where were the good armed people to protect those kids? They were no place to be found. So maybe the concept of giving everybody guns might be wrong. Now, I know you won't ever fucking admit to that, but the fact is we've got dead kids and dead adults, and your little strategy didn't work. Maybe it's time we take a look at it and maybe change shit up. That's always been my motto. If you do something and it doesn't work, step back and then do something fucking different. With the mass shootings we've got going on in this country, whatever gun laws or lack thereof we have is not working. So we need to change some things. Now, this email continues. If there is a problem and it involves public safety, it's the government's duty to enact legislation to try to prevent these killings. Simple laws could be the following: background checks at all gun sales, education prior to owning, registration and renewal process, gun buybacks, and maybe mandatory insurance policies for assault-type rifles. That one is the one that'll get them, because it's all about money, not responsibility. They have no fucking responsibility. Even if you had these laws, they wouldn't do it anyway, and they'd wait till they got caught. But make them carry insurance policies and take the money out of their pockets when they misbehave with guns. In general, the public has proven that they are not responsible enough, and it's a safety concern for the nation. General public does not need to own AR-15s, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Give me one reason why you need an AR-15, and if you tell me hunting, I'm going to punch you in the chops, because that is not a good hunting gun. It's been a while since I've hunted, but you know what? You don't. What are you going to hunt with an AR-15? Deer? Now, there are better things than that. Are you going to hunt birds or squirrels? No, you're not. The only thing an AR-15 is good for is target practice and shooting people. And if you're out there planning to shoot people, well, you need to be locked down immediately. He was talking about the military guns and how these were designed for combat and not for the general public. As Australia enacted registry buyback and outlined semi-automatic weapons, they prove that their law works. Australia now has almost 50% drop in homicides after 7 years after legislation. But the fact it works, that's not a that doesn't matter to the Republicans. They know better. They've got their Second Amendment right. The right to own as many guns as you want and walk all over the place. Well, if you read the Second Amendment and you had the ability to comprehend what those words meant, you would think otherwise. But you don't want to think otherwise. You just want your agenda and your narrative pushed, and you will take anything and lie about it, twist it, turn it, pervert it, whatever the fuck you're going to do. Just because it says one thing, by the time you get done with it, it will mean something else, at least in your mind. He goes on to say, at the minimum, the U.S. must also enact similar legislation to prevent needless deaths. Sincerely, Daniel. Well, thank you, Daniel. You bring some good insights to this, and you're absolutely right. When it comes to gun laws, something needs to be done. It's not an issue of whether you want to or should we. The fact is, people are dying every day because people who shouldn't have guns do have guns, and they end up killing the people of this country. If that isn't indicative of a problem that needs to be addressed, well, I don't know what the fuck is. Of course, the Republicans don't see a problem. They go, whoops-a-daisy. There was one representative who said, you know, I don't... There's not much more we can do. We just have to let it fly. Are you fucking kidding me? We're paying you $174,000 a year to sit in Washington, D.C. to fix our problems. And you tell me you can't do anything? Well, why the fuck are you still sitting there? You're clearly not capable of doing the job, so get the fuck out. All right, the next email. Says, hi, your story on school teachers hit home yesterday. My wife taught special education at the middle school level for 33 years. During that time, the administration dwindled to an unbelievable low, not backing the teachers in anything, trying to teach and always be on guard for so-called parents who are always looking to sue for that big payday in the sky if they do not like the teacher or her methods. And trust me, this is true. This happens all the time. Makes you wonder why anybody would want to be a teacher. Well, of course, there's a teacher shortage now, and public education will learn the rule of fucking around and finding out. He goes on to say, coming home exhausted, going to bed immediately after coming home, and then getting up around 8 p.m. doing more work that created a real nightmare. I cooked all the time to help out. When she could finally retire, her words were, and I have been constantly, why would anyone in their right mind go into education? Something I just said, I agree. Why would anybody in their right mind in this day and age go into education? He continues by saying, and now the state governments, especially in the red states, are pushing vouchers so anyone can go to for-profit schools, i.e. private schools and or charter schools. No wonder public education is fucked up. Can't teach history, can't teach anything controversial, only teach to the state tests. By the way, with all the talk every day about Trump and his merry men, what is going on with the imposter, George Santos? The subject under radar at the moment. Your thoughts, Roy? Well, that is the problem with the society we live in and the country we live in today. Every day there seems to be the hot button, the important news story that everybody laser focuses on, and we forget about all the other important issues. We're focused on Manhattan District, but still we're on the precipice of something happen with the DA in Georgia and, of course, the DOJ. We get distracted very easily. We're like the dog with a squirrel, you know? George Santos is still having some problems. It sounds like he's committed some crimes. Part of it has to fall on the part of the Republican Party when they take him into an ethics hearing for the House of Representatives. Republicans will control it, so you can only assume it will be fixed. But eventually, the FBI is going to come knocking at George Santos's door, and they are going to haul him out by his ear, and he will end up out of Congress. You know, whenever you talk about education, it hits home with me, too. As I've said, my wife was a teacher for 30 years. She tried to go back, you know, part-time just to keep her hand in it and do some substitute teaching. She went to the school she taught for the last 12, 13 years. And even that didn't make it any better for her when she went into that school. Kids were disrespectful. They didn't listen to anything. They didn't do anything. And it's impossible to teach these kids if they refuse to interact, if they refuse to do as directed. So after a few times substitute teaching, you know, kind of trying to slowly ease her way out of teaching, that was the point where she said, yeah, I don't ever want to fucking do this again. It's not worth it. Now think about that. A woman, or a male for that matter, who taught 30 years in a school district during periods of times with some turbulence, difficult times to be sure. And now in 2023, these people with all that vast experience don't want any part of this shit. It's too much to handle. That tells you something about our public education. We are in deep trouble in public education. We have the problem that parents seemingly run the schools. The administration is scared to death of parents being sued or yelled at or whatever the hell's going to happen. So they let the kids and their parents run roughshod and do whatever they fucking like. And whatever they do, they give them praise, go, oh, that's the best, whatever the fuck you just did, the best one I've ever seen. These kids are filled with misinformation, false hope, and the effects on their ego has to be immense. I don't know if all kids take to it this way, but if someone tells you you're the greatest person in the world, you've done nothing wrong, and you're a gifted student, you're going to play that role, whether you are that or not. And that's kind of what we've got going in private schools and public schools right now, specifically public schools. Private, I would think that they probably have a little more authority because these people are paying for it. Anyway, that email was written by Roy. He's written a number of times. He's been on the show with his wife, the former teacher. All right, the next one comes up. Joshua. Tucker Carlson just perfectly framed an argument against the banning of TikTok and used an AOC TikTok to support his argument on Fox. I'm shocked. I'm confused. Thank you for your thoughts or theories for this Fox pivot. I'm stumped, but my intuition tells me it has something to do with a lawsuit against Fox News. I think it probably has everything. They're trying to dig themselves out of a hole, and they aren't going to have much luck, quite frankly. It's not going to be that easy to do. But they can't continue to do what they've been doing because they're already getting sued for it, and they don't need any more lawsuits coming their way. All right, this one's another email. Hi, Mike. It's been a while since I wrote, as I have been knee-deep in researching the right-wing segment on YouTube. My focus is to make others aware soon who they are blindly listening to. There's a lot of money behind the scenes enticing new and struggling streamers to change their narratives, shift their show to fully right-leaning, and if you can provoke engagement out of the viewers in real time, even better. You can't get a Rumble deal or a Birch Gold sponsorship. Sadly, this is more popular today than it ever had been. Maybe one day I will join you, your other guest, and talk about it a little in detail. But in the meantime, I'm writing to thank your listeners. The email section reminds me the country is full of bright, kind, rational boomers. In particular, today, the first two emails focus on some points regarding the public schools and gender chromosome facts. I really appreciate these emails, as these are two topics I saw on a sharp rise this past month as Loud and Proud sock it to the left on YouTube and their Twitter accounts. These topics have been at an all-time high even before the Nashville event. The rise to push these narratives hard began during CPAC and has yet to let up. Listening to the listener emails and your news commentary, I find it the best way to start my day. I'm always learning something new from you, and I'm reminded each morning there are many more of us rational boomers of all ages the right want their viewers to believe. I also love when you share your personal stories. You're a good man, Mike, and a smart husband. If your wife wants a recliner, it's time to get that lady a recliner. Love that. As always, thanks for your show. Paige. And as far as being a good man, I try to be, but I am a man. So in my history, I'm sure I've done some pretty stupid and shitty things. I try to make amends now that I'm older and wiser and try to be a better person. In terms of my wife, that's kind of my job. She may not see it that way, but it's true. If she wants to do something, I'm going to have to make her feel comfortable with doing it if it's a big choice. Like buying this condo in Georgia. She had to decide. It was a really hard thought for her to decide this, and I understand it's a lot of money. I don't get taken in by money. I don't get scared by money. And she said, well, we're just going to pay cash for this condo. Now, don't get me wrong. We don't have that kind of cash laying around. But she did have investments that she set aside during the time she was in school or teaching school. And she built up a fair sum. Now, when it was all said and done and she retired and I retired, we had our pensions and we had Social Security and some other income. But we had this investments. And I said, honey, what are you going to do with those investments? I mean, what's the plan for them? We don't need them for income. So what are you going to do with it? I said, well, I'm just going to leave it as an inheritance to the boys, my sons. I said, cool, I'm good with that. But what happens if one of us goes into a nursing home, for example, and we can't afford it after a period of time? The county comes in, but then they come and drain our bank accounts and they drain your investment account. All those years you put into it will get flushed away because one of us got sick, and your intention of giving it to the boys as an inheritance will disappear. And she hadn't thought about that. And I said, so you want to buy a place in Savannah. I want to buy a place in Savannah. You have X amount of dollars in an investment. What if you took some of that investment in cash and bought the condo in Savannah? And at first she liked the idea because it was emotional to her. She wanted this. And then she started rethinking it. And she said, oh, that's scary. What if the price and the value goes down after you buy it? What if we pay too much? What if we do this? I said, look at it this way. You got all this money sitting in investments. It could go up. It could go down. It could go away if something bad happens to you and I. And then all that time and all that planning, that money doesn't exist. If you took not all of it, but a portion of that money and bought a condo, where would that put us? Well, you put it in the boys' names, and when we die, they just own it outright. They get the inheritance. She says, yeah, but housing could go up and down. I go, what do we give a fuck? We're not selling the condo, not the one we live in Minnesota, not the one here in Savannah. We're never selling it. It'll be something my sons decide to do well after we're gone. And if it's a bad time for them to sell, they've got youth on their side. They just hold on to it and sell it when they feel it's a better opportunity. Or when you really look at it, because they got no money into these homes, whatever they get is a net positive to them. So we decided that we were going to take a chunk of money out of the investments, just buy the condo outright, just buy it, which was crazy. We've never done anything like that in the past, but it was an opportunity to do it. Now, the next step was to explain it to our investment guy, what we're going to do. And my wife was iffy about it, and he goes, well, what if he gets mad at us? I said, honey, he works for us. He's there to do exactly what we tell him. And so we're going through the process. We're going to do the deal. And my wife says to me, do you have any second thoughts about it? Are you worried about it? I go, not in the fucking least. Not in the least, because at least a chunk of that investment you now have control over. You know the boys will get it when we're gone. And better yet, instead of it sitting in some investment that you will never touch, even though you earned all that money, now you'll get to experience and enjoy the fruits of that money while still leaving a good inheritance to the boys. Every so often she goes, I don't know, should we? Yeah, we should have done it. I have no question in my mind. It was a smart move. Whatever money's in this condo can never be taken away. So, and I don't even remember what fucking point I was making, but the point is that sometimes I have to convince her or sell her on the idea. She wants to do it, but then she'll get second thoughts about it. And I understand that a lot of people do. And I'll be honest with you, I never do. If I've got something I've got to answer, I'll look at it, analyze it, look at it, analyze it, and just keep going through it. And then when I make the final decision, I feel comfortable enough to say, that's my decision, I'm not going back. And I'll tell you this, one thing I learned about life, I've tried to explain this to my boys, and I don't know if they understand it. It's very simple, though. The fact of the matter is, in life, you are better off making the wrong decision than no decision. Because at least with the wrong decision, you learn something, you can back off and go, okay, I'll try this instead. If that doesn't work, you go try that instead. But you're always moving forward, and you're always learning something. If you are too afraid to make a decision, you sit stagnantly and get nothing done and go nowhere. It's not a hard choice when you look at it like that. So anyway, Paige, I thank you for the email. It's always good to hear from you. Let's see, I think I got one more. Yeah, one more. Let's do this. Hi, Mike. It's been a while since I last wrote. I've been knee-deep in researching my right-wing segment. Wait a minute, is that the same one I just read? Hold on. Yeah, that's Paige. Okay, here's the next one. Hi, Mike. I hope this email finds you well. My name is Chud, and I've been a longtime listener to your commentary. I just want to take a moment to thank you for all your insights you've shared and the thought-provoking discussions you've initiated. I have a question that's been weighing on my mind for you a while now, and I was hoping to get your take on it. As you know, there's been a lot of talk about the accountability of rich white men in America, and it seems like many are of the opinion that they often get away with their misdeeds. I've noticed that even pundits and commentators like yourself seem to have a hard time coming to terms with the fact that Trump may never be held accountable for his actions. Now, I will question you on that. I've never said I'm afraid of him not being accountable. He will be accountable. There is no question. Of course, there are a lot of people that believe he won't be held accountable. And I try to convince them, and they don't listen because they go into everything looking at the negative side, assuming the worst. If you go into anything in your life assuming to the worst, you're probably going to get the worst. And if you get that attitude, if you have that attitude, you are doing a disservice to your life and you're going to lead a shittier life. Be confident, be positive, assume the best. Life's so much more fun when you're hopeful and bright and cheery as opposed to down and have this doomsday attitude. Now he goes on to say, I understand that some people are holding on to the hope that he will eventually face the consequences of his actions. But it's important to be realistic, too. Even if he is indicted, there's a good chance he'll get off on all charges, which could only embolden him and his supporters. If we're talking about going to jail, I don't know about that. But if he gets indicted, there are going to be some convictions. The evidence is too clear. And the problem is, it's not just the grand jury and the DOJ that knows about it. All of us know about it. If he gets indicted and doesn't get convicted, there is going to be holy hell to pay from the left in this country. It won't be a pleasant experience. And I can't possibly believe that he doesn't get convicted of something. That would cause as much problems as they thought it would be if they indicted a former president. They were worried about the problems that might occur in this country if they convicted a former president. I think now, with all we know and all we've seen and how egregious these crimes have been, I think there'll be more problems if they don't convict him. He says, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but I do think it's important to face facts. Trump has committed numerous crimes, but he's never been held accountable for any of them. I appreciate your optimism, but at what point does it become misleading? Are we expected to hold on to false hope forever? I appreciate your insights on this topic and look forward to hearing back from you. Best regards, Chut. Well, I'll put it to you this way. You said, I appreciate your optimism, but at what point does it become misleading? Well, it becomes misleading when I'm proven wrong, but I haven't been proven wrong very much now, have I? And it's not that I'm some super brain, it's because I'm looking at the facts and looking at logic. Chud, you're looking at things emotionally. You hope that it's going to be this way, but somehow in your heart you know it's not going to be because nothing ever works out with these rich white people. I'm telling you, these are different times. This isn't like 30 years ago for Donald Trump in New York City. It's because he is a former president. He's not up against some construction vendor. He's up against the U.S. government and the vast majority of this country. You can't compare what Donald Trump has gotten away with or any other rich man has gotten away with back when they owned their own companies. Once they enter this arena, it's much bigger than they are. And when we have media pounding on this and all the facts being exposed, it's a different situation. I will never purposely mislead somebody to get them to think one way or another. If I see something and I, like I told you before, I look at things, I analyze, I look at every possible way it could go and try to figure out what could happen. And then I figure out what's the logical thing that could happen. You know, Occam's razor. So up until the time that I'm not wrong, that I'm wrong, then I'm not being misleading. That said, if I tell you something and I am wrong, and that's certainly possible, I'll say, fuck it, I was wrong. Because there's no shame in being wrong. That's another issue that a lot of people have. They have shame in being wrong. The last thing they ever want to do is be wrong. I really don't care if I'm wrong. In some cases, I hope I'm wrong, because not all things are absolutely positive. I mean, what Donald Trump and the Republicans have done to this country is terribly damaging. I can't look on the bright side and say, once Donald Trump gets indicted, everything will be better. It won't, because it will take a long time to fix. It's going to take a lot of work and attention. But when you get to the point where you believe there is no hope, then what's the fucking point? That's what I say to people. You're sitting here talking to me like you think this is all hopeless. So then what's the point of getting out of bed in the morning? There's always got to be some hope, and there always is some hope. Take a look at our history. We've had some terrible times in this country, but somehow we've gotten through it. And people will say, not as bad as it is now. I disagree. The 60s were worse than what we have now in many ways. 9/11, a horrible tragedy. That changed everything in this country. And a lot of people thought we could never come back from that, but we did. We weren't the same, but we came back. And that will be the case when we're talking about this Trump administration era. We will come back for it. We will be different. We will be smarter. And we will be more cautious. And maybe that's the one good thing that Donald Trump has given us through this whole stretch of fucking horror. We've suffered a lot, but we've learned a lot. We're going to expose a lot. And a lot of people that could have gone along being criminals for the next 30 years in Congress will not get that chance. If you really believe that Donald Trump won't get indicted, or if he does get indicted, won't get convicted, I will tell you right now, you're fooling yourself. It's going to happen. Like I've always said, you only need one indictment and then the rest will start to fall. Don't base your thoughts on what you've seen before, because you ain't never seen this before. So you can't make that comparison. You got to deal with what's going on now instead of working on emotions or looking at the past. Look at today. Look at the facts. Look at what makes sense, not what your gut feels or your heart feels or what you're worried about. Let's just look at facts and make decisions based on facts. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
We were talking about all the negative Nellies out there that say, Donald Trump will never be held accountable. Nothing will ever happen to him. Nothing has ever happened before. Nothing will ever happen to him in the future. And all the people around him will get away with it too. Oh my God, we're doomed. For all those people, yesterday must have been a banner day, because the New York grand jury investigating former President Donald Trump's alleged role in paying hush money to a porn star now is going to take a break. After April 5th, they'll take off most of April, and that comes from multiple reports. Earlier this month, Trump posted on his social media website that he would be indicted and arrested within days. Last Tuesday, to be exact. And that wasn't the case. Should we be surprised that Donald Trump was lying? No. And then when he wasn't indicted, the Republicans all stood up and said, oh my God, see, they've got problems. They're not going to indict Donald Trump ever. Otherwise, they would have indicted them. Well, the fact of the matter is, the only news or leak of the indictment came from fucking Donald Trump. And why did Donald Trump leak that, even though he knew he wasn't going to be indicted? Well, that looks good on an email. I'm going to get indicted. You got to send me money to help me. You know that's what happened. Donald Trump has not been collecting much money as of late, certainly compared to what he was collecting prior to this. So he needed something big to spur those those donations. And he did. He made a fair amount of money telling people that he was going to be indicted, or actually arrested, last Tuesday. Well, when that didn't happen, Donald Trump and all the Republicans tried to make it look like that Alvin Bragg in the Manhattan District were in trouble. They were questioning whether they're going to indict Donald Trump. Donald Trump even went out there and said, yep, as far as I know, they dropped the case. Well, how could they drop the case if there was no case as yet? There is no case until they indict Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't know fucking anything from fucking anything. He will just say whatever comes out of his mouth in hopes that it will somehow enrich him through fundraising or what have you. So now we hear the story that Alvin Bragg not only isn't going to indict Donald Trump next week or 2 days from now, that they're going to take a break from April 5th to maybe the last week of April. And people are worried or upset or disappointed. And I guess it is a little disappointing. We want the action now. We want it to happen. But why would Alvin Bragg do this? The Republicans would have you believe that they don't have any evidence. They don't have a case. They're just holding back until they can figure out what to do. Or there's another possibility. Maybe Alvin Bragg needs to do some more interviews. We know that after we thought Donald Trump might be indicted, he had two more interviews, the last one being David Pecker, former publisher of the National Enquirer. Maybe there's some more people he's going to talk to. But what is more than likely, given that Georgia, the Manhattan District, and the DOJ are all similarly close to indicting Donald Trump. The first indictment to fall will have a big bearing on what happens with the rest of them. So it's not crazy to think that Jack Smith, Fonnie Willis, and Alvin Bragg are all talking, saying, you got an indictment, you got an indictment, you got a couple of indictments. Let's do this right. This will be the biggest case or cases in the history of this country. The first time a former president has been indicted and sent to trial. It's the first time. So they've got to get this right. Is it best to come out with the Manhattan District case first, the Stormy Daniels situation? Or would it be better for Fonnie Willis's stuff to come out? Or even better yet, how about the DOJ with the classified documents, or even the January 6th insurrection? I think theoretically, if they had exactly what they wanted, it would be Jack Smith, then Fonnie Willis, and then the Manhattan District to put the cherry on top. That would be the best, most effective, and most damaging procedure for this to happen. Are they trying to set that up? Are they working together to try to create some kind of strategy? Well, I don't know. But it seems likely, because these are all very smart people. They're all a little nervous about jumping into indicting a former president because, as I said, it's never, ever happened before. So it isn't unreasonable to think that they are really trying to figure out this situation to the best of their ability, to the best of their advantage. Now, Trump, hearing about all this stuff, wrote on Truth Social today. But let's go back to March 18th. He said, they're killing our nation as we sit back and watch. We must save America. Protest, protest, protest. If that isn't an incitement for violence, I don't know what the fuck is, and it's probably not going to help him out with his J6 investigation. This thing is going to come up. It's going to rear its ugly head. Trump's social media post sparked a wave of speculation as to whether he could or would actually be arrested, but the grand jury hasn't finished its work. On Wednesday, outlets including CNN and Politico reported that a decision about a possible indictment won't be announced until late April at the earliest, after a week-long break for the grand jury. The grand jury heard testimony in the case Monday, but did not meet on Wednesday and is expected to look at evidence in a separate matter on Thursday before breaking for most of April. I mean, you got to understand, these are just people in there too. Can you imagine setting aside that much time out of your job and out of your family to do this? You've got to give them some time off from time to time. Now, after announcing he'd soon be arrested, Trump reportedly fundraised $1.5 million in 3 days for his presidential campaign, or to buy Big Macs or another fucking suit or something. The idea that all the money went to his campaign is a little ridiculous because we know he doesn't fucking do that. Trump took Wednesday's news that the grand jury would delay its decision as a victory, of course he did, posting in all caps on Truth Social that he has gained such respect for the grand jury and perhaps even the grand jury system as a whole. See, he sees this as a win. He's too stupid to get what's really going on. He really thinks that he might be out from under it because all of his life he's been bailed out. All his life he's never been accountable, and he really believes now that Alvin Bragg hasn't indicted him yet, he must be free and clear. Well, Donnie, you're mistaken. That is not true. That is not the case. And you're going to be sweating very soon, if not already. All right, we've been talking about Mike Pence, too. And he's kind of a joke. He's a weak-ass bitch. Thinks he's going to run for president. Was told he needed to testify in front of Jack Smith, but he says, nah, I'm not going to do that. Well, a federal judge said he's going to do it. Now, the interesting thing is he has two options, just to give in and testify or to appeal to a higher court and keep appealing it until he gets to the Supreme Court. He will lose every one of those cases. Ultimately, he will have to testify. But is he going to do that? Well, he's kind of inkling that he's not. Pence had gone to court to block a subpoena from a special counsel, Jack Smith, to appear before a federal grand jury examining Trump's actions leading up to January 6, 2021, when he incited that mob. Now, James Boasberg, chief judge of the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., ruled Monday that Pence had to testify, but in his still-sealed ruling said that Pence was correct that in his role as president of the Senate, James Boasberg, chief judge of the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., ruled on Monday that Pence had to testify, but in his still-sealed ruling said that Pence was correct that in his role as president of the Senate, Pence was protected by the speech and debate clause of the Constitution, according to sources familiar with the case. I still question that. But the judge had a little surprise for him. By suggesting that, I think Mike Pence thought that he would get off completely. He would be free and clear of everything. But the judge pointed out that, yes, you may have been part of Congress on that day, January 6th, but you weren't in all the days leading up to January 6th. So, okay, we won't have you testify on what you said on January 6th, but we'll talk, we'll look at everything you talked about with President Trump up until that point on January 6th. So he did the smart thing. He basically gave in to Pence a little bit. And frankly, I don't think he really had to. I don't think that's a thing. I think he just did that to suck him in. But you do have to testify for all the days leading up to January 6th. Much of prosecutors' interest is not in Pence's dealing with members of Congress, but about his interactions and conversations with Trump and his aides who are part of the legislative branch. Pence had originally said that he would take his efforts to avoid testifying all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, if necessary, in a brief question and answer session with reporters in Urbandale, Iowa, though. Pence said he was pleased that Boasberg had agreed to that speech and debate clause that applied to the vice president as role as head of the Senate. Now, while prosecutors have already presented testimony from top Pence aides to the grand jury, Trump's efforts to pressure the vice president, Pence would be able to provide firsthand evidence of his conversations with Trump rather than the secondhand knowledge. Trump and his inner circle had started scheming to send their own slates of fraudulent electors to Congress even before the Electoral College met to officially cast their ballots on December 14, 2020. That morning, in fact, top Trump White House aide Stephen Miller appeared on Fox News to brag about the plan and said pro-Trump members of Congress would be able to present these alternate slates as a way to overturn the election. Well, little Stevie Miller was wrong. Trump began leaning on Pence to cite the existence of the fake electors as a way to simply declare Trump the winner soon after December 14th and significantly ratchet up the chaos and the pressure after Christmas. Now, the pressure campaign morphed into an outright coup attempt, literally a coup attempt, when Trump used the threat of violence and then actual violence in an attempt to coerce Pence into doing as Trump had demanded. That culminated in a social media post, 224, on January 6th. I'm sure we were all watching the event as it played out. Four of Trump's own supporters died that day in the melee, while five police officers died in the coming days. Another 140 officers were injured. And, of course, as far as the Republicans are concerned, it was little more than tourists just having fun. But those peaceful protests out in front of Supreme Court Justice Holmes, oh, that's another story. Those are terrorists, even though it was completely peaceful. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got injured. But that, you know, that's how they do things. They will just flat out lie. The people protesting in front of the justices were horrible terrorist people, but the people crashing the windows, shitting and pissing on floors, stealing items, trying to overthrow the government, overturn the election, yeah, they were just a bunch of good people. Yeah, fuck you. At a rally on Saturday in Waco, Trump played a recording of the Star Spangled Banner sung by January 6 detainees who have been charged with assaulting police officers, interspersed with Trump's reading of the Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, how fucking dramatic. And they of course, keep trying to insist that those insurrectionists that attack the Capitol are now political prisoners and living in horrible conditions. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, a lot of people are going down there trying to visit them, pushing for them to be let out. Yeah, that's what we need to do, is let out more insurrectionists, let them back into the world so they can fucking do it again. Now, you remember Ron DeSantis with the whole Reedy Creek thing, you know? He wanted to teach Disney a lesson. So he wanted to take their rights away from them. But what it ultimately did is going to cost taxpayers in Florida a lot more money. He says it won't, but wait till they get their tax bill next year. They are going to be horrified by what Ron DeSantis has done. But as I've always told you, I know Ron DeSantis got his law degree at Yale or something like that, but that doesn't mean he's not a dumb fucker. Because clearly what happened yesterday epitomizes, proves, illustrates just what a dumb fucker he is. Now, the plans of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to take over control of Walt Disney World's self-governing district near Orlando appears to have been thwarted by a tiny little mousetrap. Five board members handpicked by DeSantis to oversee the special governing and taxing district encompassing Walt Disney World admitted Wednesday that their Disney-controlled predecessors pulled a fast one on them by passing restricted covenants that stripped the new board of many of its powers, according to the Associated Press. So Ron DeSantis handpicking these Trump fucks, putting them in there, saying, you do my bidding, we're going to straighten this shit out. But as I've said before, Disney is not somebody to be trifled with. It's a big fucking company. It has a lot of money. And I guarantee you, they have way better lawyers than Ron DeSantis has in the state of Florida. So basically, Ron said, I'm going to control things. I'm going to appoint these board members. And then before they did that, Walt Disney says, that's fine, you can do that, but we're taking all the power away from you, and we'll keep doing what the fuck we're doing. I even heard a story that they're planning to have a huge LGBTQ event at Disney World. Can you imagine how many Republicans are going to be absolutely shitting their pants when this occurs? Now, during a meeting of the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District, the current supervisors announced that the previous board members had signed an agreement with the company that gave Disney maximum development power over the theme park's resort's 27,000 acres. DeSantis appointed the five supervisors to the board after the Florida legislature retaliated for Disney's public opposition to the state controversial Don't Say Gay law, which bars classroom discussions of sexual orientation or gender identity in kindergarten through third grade. This truly upset the Republicans. Oh, they were mad as shit. Now, the previous board had been controlled by Disney for 55 years and was known as the Reedy Creek Improvement District. The agreement allows Disney the maximum possible density and building heights inside Walt Disney World, while other property owners will need the corporation's permission to expand within the district and to make any aesthetic changes to their properties. And Ronnie got played again. This is going to happen over and over again. Ron and Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz and all these dumb fucks, they think they're going to have a gotcha moment. But when it comes down to it, they're so stupid, it's them that got. Goes on to say, we'd lose control over everything other than to maintain the roads and maintain the infrastructure, one board member said, according to WFTV. So these board members were put in there thinking they were going to control things and change some things at Walt Disney World. How dare you confront us and contradict us? We'll show you. But in the end, Disney fucked over Ron DeSantis and his five hand-picked committee members. Now they can't do jack shit. Funny Ron didn't think about that ahead of time. I mean, you would think a Yale law degree might give you some insight or maybe some foresight as to what could happen and then maybe do something about it to protect yourself. But apparently not in this case. Ron DeSantis once again gets fooled again and made to look incredibly foolish. It doesn't take much with Ron, but this doesn't help matters much. Now, one especially bizarre detail, the agreement reportedly lasts until 21 years after the death of the last survivor of Britain's King Charles III, who was scheduled to be coronated in May, according to Click Orlando. The fuck does that have to do with anything? But, you know, you have all these little inside lines, these small print areas. And like I said, Walt Disney World got Ron DeSantis, played that motherfucker like a fiddle. The new board members said they found out about the agreement after their appointments. We're going to have to deal with it and correct it. Yeah, good luck with that. You think you're going to fight Walt Disney? I don't think so. Board member Brian August said Wednesday, according to AB, it's a subversion of the will of the voters and the legislature and the governor. it completely circumvents the authority of this board to govern. Well, for 60 years, 50, 60 years, they had autonomy to do all these things. Voters didn't matter. The governor didn't matter. But even now that they've made these changes, nobody voted for the Reedy Creek development or voted against it. But they want to make it about the will of the people. Well, why don't you take a poll in Florida and see what the people want to do with Walt Disney World? I have a feeling that they want to keep it the same as it's always been. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been so highly attended as it is. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis Communication Director Taryn Fenske issued the following statement. All right, here we go. The executive office of the governor is aware of Disney's last-ditch efforts to execute contracts just before ratifying the new law that transferred rights and authorities from the former Reedy Creek Improvement District to Disney. An initial review suggests these agreements may have significant legal infirmities and would render the contracts void as a matter of law. We are pleased the new governor-appointed board retained multiple financial and legal firms to conduct audits and investigate Disney's past behavior. So you know what's going to happen? Government officials aren't the only ones that know this trick. They know they have more power, so they tie people up in court until they can't take it anymore. You want to bet that's what Disney's doing? As much as the government has a lot of money, they have to account for it. They have to sell it to the people that pay those taxes. Disney does not. Disney does not have to be accountable for what it spends. It can spend whatever it wants. And if the Florida government, the state government, is going to go head to head against Disney World, they are going to lose miserably. In a statement Wednesday to Huffington Post, Walt Disney World insisted that all agreements signed between Disney and the district were appropriate and were discussed and approved in open, noticed public forums in compliance with Florida's government in the Sunshine Law. So they told them they were fucking doing it. They said, yeah, we're doing it. And they still got played. It's truly amazing. Truly fucking amazing. All right, this last story is kind of interesting. Sources are telling WNBC that Alan Weisselberg, the former CFO of the Trump Organization, has fired his Trump Organization lawyers. Why would he do that? Why would he take on that expense while he's already in jail? Well, for the very same reason Cassidy Hutchinson fired the Trump lawyers. She knew, Ellen Weisselberg knows, that as long as he's using their lawyers, he's obliged to Donald Trump. He is indebted to Donald Trump. So he's got to do Donald Trump's bidding. Now, Ellen Weisselberg's in a weird situation. For the fraud that was committed in the in the Trump Organization in New York, he ends up going to jail at Rikers Island for 5 months. No light duty for a guy who's 75 years old. But I think he thought he got off pretty easy. 5 months in jail, that sucks, but it could have been a lot worse, so maybe he's happy with that. But we later find out that the government, the Democrats, the DOJ, if you will, aren't done with Alan Weisselberg. As much as he's been convicted and in jail, part of the conditions of him going to jail and being convicted is that he confessed and took responsibility for it. Now, by firing Donald Trump's lawyers, it might suggest that he's tired of playing along. He now sees with this Stormy Daniels situation, he may be implicated in that. So theoretically, he could go to jail for that. Get indicted, go to trial, go to jail, and just add on to that 5 month sentence. Maybe it becomes 2 years now, maybe 5 years. So the pressure is on The pressure is on Alan Weisselberg. And if he fired Trump's lawyers, I have to assume that he's had enough now. He's given all he can. He can't give any more. So he is going to be a little more forthcoming with his information about Donald Trump. He's firing the lawyers. So first of all, they don't know what he's saying. And since it's a grand jury, it's all very secretive. So no one will know. But he's going to get rid of the lawyers, and he's probably going to throw Donald Trump under the bus, mainly because, and he's been a tough nut to crack, but he's probably going to do it this time because he sees the end is near. He sees that Donald Trump is not going to win, and he doesn't want to be on that side of a sinking ship. So he's probably going to give up Donald Trump so he doesn't get any more additional time on his sentence. 5 months is a lot of time for a 75-year-old guy in a serious and dangerous prison. I got to tell you, after spending 5 months there, the last thing he will want to do is spend more time there. So he's going to do what he has to do. He's going to throw Donald Trump under the bus. I'll give him credit that all this time he stuck with Donald Trump no matter what. But now things have changed. 75-year-old man, we could be looking at being in jail for the rest of his life. So what they need to do is come up with some kind of understanding between the two of them and get this done right. But trust me, Alan Weisselberg has had enough of being in jail, and he is going to throw Donald Trump under the bus. He fired Trump's lawyers, and he's going to want to talk. There is no question about it. He's going to want to talk. He has to. I am very surprised that it's taken this long, but this is check and checkmate. There's really nothing more he can do except go to court, get convicted, and at another 5 months, 10 months, a year, 2 years to a sentence. And I got to tell you, that's not going to be very appetizing for Alan Weisselberg, a 75-year-old white man getting sent to Rikers Island. That is some serious shit. So I suspect we're going to be seeing some action up in the Manhattan District once they get back from their break because of Alan Weisselberg's willingness now to testify. All right, we are going to wrap up the Rational Boomer podcast. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen. I hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.